This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Shake Them Ropes, Jeff Hawkins, Chris Novembrino, back with you. This show, in my mind, had three different beginnings in terms of how I was going to start this, because my feelings changed over the week, and Chris will be able to help me work through my feelings, as I often do.
I'm here to help. This is a place for feelings.
Because Monday night after Raw, I was incredibly sad. And it has nothing – I mean, it's more a selfish kind of sad for what could have been for Becky's career and you know, how now we'll never see really a horsewomen angle, which they were never interested in on the main roster. And then last night, Friday night, after watching SmackDown and watching that absolutely rewriting history video package on Becky, which was very good, but absolute BS. It was absolute BS because Becky, much like Daniel Bryan, is an accidental superstar. And we'll go into that as we look through her career, because I'm treating this as a post-mortem on her career, because I don't think we're ever going to see her again. And if we do, it'll probably be for one match.
5 to 7 years, I think. She's on that long departure, don't expect her back next year sort of arc, I'd say, at bare minimum.
Too many people are like, I'm gone for now, and took that as literal. And I think she's a stay-at-home, raise-a-family type here that might come back for one match, or we'll see her when Seth decides, you know, hey, I want to help raise my kids instead of being on the road type of thing as well. I don't think it's going to be a split thing.
That's the most likely outcome of what happens with Seth and Becky. But I'll
I'm not going to opine on that.
Hey, what's your favorite Dusty Rhodes moment? I'll tell you mine. Mine is where the kids are sitting in the living room and they're all watching TV and they're like, what are we going to do today? Saturday's pretty boring. And then all of a sudden, Dusty Rhodes bursts in through the brick wall, and he's like, oh, yeah, Dusty Rhodes. How about you?
Oh, we'll get to the Otis stuff in a sec. But I'm fired up today because I realized on Saturday morning I started a thread which just kind of blew up about, because I was watching Evolution 2018, which is a very underrated match in the Becky canon, because I was asking what are the great matches that she's had, and there's the TakeOver match, there's this one, and then there are some very good ones. You know, a couple of Asuka matches, the Sasha matches, you know, the Hell in the Cell was quite good, but it's just overshadowed by that crap show that the Seth Bray Wyatt Hell in the Cell was. We should be celebrating Becky Lynch, because she absolutely over-delivered on what her career trajectory could have been in terms of how the WWE system uses people.
Book arc, right? Yeah. She was very much on that mid-card, we don't quite know what to do with you, going all the way back to River Dancing, which I think a lot of us forget about. But I remember vividly River Dancing, Becky Lynch crossing her arms and doing like a little dance thing and then kicking people. I don't know if you guys remember this, but I mean, she used to be Irish McIrishin.
Yeah, let's and Shake Them Ropes has kind of survived the survived, but has been around for the Becky WWE era stuff. So I'll take this a little bit chronologically, and we can all reminisce a bit together here. She had taken a few years off after getting a head injury in Shimmer, I believe it was, and got signed to this deal, 2-year deal in WWE. If you really want to go see, I think, the most pure Becky Lynch when she's still Rebecca Knox doing, being a second for the Kingdom, which was Soraya Knight and Paige, kind of being a manager and just dancing and being kind of goofy. That's always the most pure version, is, you know, the punster on Twitter, Becky Lynch, later in NXT. But she comes in, and yes, she is Riverdance McRiverdance, you know, full green sequins, doing a dance. Yeah, bright red hair, or not bright red hair, it's kind of orange.
What people is she supposed to represent? It's so hard to tell. It's subtle.
It's so subtle. But you're watching her, and you know that there's something there, because she's doing these suplexes, and she's really doing some catch-as-catch-can. And Rob and I listened to some of the audio there, and we're like, there's something here that they're just absolutely missing on in favor of making her entertaining. And so we get into the start of the ascent of Sasha Banks and Charlotte Flair, where, you know, and that's basically what we like to call Sting Bailey period, where Bailey would find friends to fight Sasha and all of them would turn on her. And it started with Charlotte Flair, and we had that. And then Charlotte and Sasha started a rivalry after that. And then Bailey brings in Becky Lynch to help combat Charlotte and Sasha and the BFFs. And Becky turns on Bailey and they become Team Bay, best at everything, which was very underrated little pairing, I thought, in the canon. And then it becomes this weird four-way feud between the four NXT horsewomen. And Becky decides that she wants a shot at the title after winning a triple threat, and we get to that NXT match in, I believe it's July of 2015. So she had already been on the roster about a year and a half, 2 years by now. And that really made Becky, because before then, you know, she was kind of trying to find gear and stuff to fit this heel character. She comes out as Steampunk Becky, has a hell of a match. Crowd babies her like a rock star after the takeover, at the end of the takeover. And 2 months later, she's on the main roster. So her NXT run is one of those where I believe even Rob and I were like, is she going to get cut because they just can't find anything to do with her, to rocket success as part of this NXT horsewomen thing? Which,
you know what's interesting about that, though, is this is a byproduct, once again, of WWE not knowing how to make a modern babyface.
Yes.
And the reason the crowd babied Becky with the steampunk gimmick, yes, they liked the steampunk gimmick, but the steampunk gimmick was way more relatable than what she had been doing before as Irish River Dance Becky Lynch. Like this is a much more relatable character and a much cooler character, and that gets into the other problem. They still tend to make cooler, more likable, more relatable heels than they do with baby faces.
Well, it's funny because now we're going to get into her main roster run, and it's almost a carbon copy, because instead of, God, this is what drove me nuts at the time, and I was seething. Instead of looking at all this press that the NXT horsewomen got and going, we can really just make a sweeping change in our women's division and make it a great wrestling division full of characters and stuff like that, they decided to look at it as a stable and go, who's the star of this? And if they're the Beatles, Sasha and Charlotte are really John and Paul here. Because they knew that Sasha was red hot, but Charlotte's, you know, gigantic star.
Charlotte's the Paul here, who they think make all the pop hits with, but you end up getting wings.
Yeah. Well, I'm not gonna shade Charlotte that much, because she was always gonna be fine as a star. I'm sorry, I thought you wanted to say something else about Charlotte.
No, I don't have more to say than Wings had some good songs. You want me to start humming Live or Let Die?
I love Live and Let Die. I love Band on the Run. I love
good,
you know,
sex in both of those songs, but
Jet.
Jet's the best of those, but like, Jet's the one that's the most coherent of a song all the way through. Whereas Live or Let Die or Band on the Run are both just like mishmashes of like song ideas that are strung together in either a very quote unquote 1970s way, or more, we're just patching together ideas using the tape reel.
Okay. back to the Becky point before we get on music tangents.
It's on Wings. Fine. That's fine. No, it's cool. I'm fine. Well, we can talk more about Dusty.
So we get formerly the Submission Sorority going into now Team PCB, and Becky is basically there to take falls for to get Paige and Charlotte over you know, she got that one fall against Nikki Bella, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, in the main three versus three match. But this thing was so, they had to cater to the give Divas a chance hashtag as part of this revolution, which I just thought was unnecessary. And then,
like, even the whole women's evolution requires a lot of revisionist history. The women's evolution was originally, I think, the women's revolution, or like a revolution, but the implication was the fans were pushing it back against WWE because they were sick of, in the year 2013 or 2014, seeing a pink butterfly title belt for the women because they thought it was demeaning.
You know, eventually Paige turns on Charlotte and Becky and then can't wrestle anymore. You know, and Becky is kind of then put in as the third wheel of that first triple threat at Mania, which is a quote unquote co-main event. But it was, I mean, everybody saw through this. Becky was there to take the fall because Sasha still was white hot, even though I think she should have won that match because Charlotte didn't need the help. But Becky takes the fall and gets the sexual harassment spot in the middle of Me Too, if you remember that, or right at the beginning of it, towards the beginning of it. Oh, yeah, with
the Ric Flair stuff.
Yeah, which has been memory hold on the match. You don't see that anymore. You don't see that.
You just completely edited that whole section out?
I believe so, yeah.
Wow.
And then she's in limbo again. She kind of gets to play Sting, where she's a babyface and she's getting turned on by tag partners. She's trying the whole putting in the Brave from Disney gimmick of, you know, straight fire and shooting an arrow before she hits a forearm in the corner. And she eventually becomes the centerpiece around the SmackDown women's title. But even in that thing, she's not the star. She's kind of there, you know, to put over Alexa Bliss. And she gets that feud with Mickey James, which isn't half bad, as La Luchadora, if you remember that thing.
Right. Yeah, that was actually kind of fun. And Mickey turned in a good match against Becky, too, if memory serves. Yeah.
Mickey's great. I think Mickey's, again, we've been over this before. Mickey's possibly the most underrated person ever.
Match, the bar was super low for that takeover match. Like people were not expecting a big match from Mickey coming back in her return. And I wouldn't say she turned in an all-time classic. It was a life change. But it was like she vastly overperformed expectations at the takeover.
Then we get, you know, these feuds with Natty and Carmella and you know, she's teaming with Naomi.
Don't forget about a big old Nia Jax push in the middle that was a heat killer for everyone.
Well, that comes, I think, is this the second one or the one that you're thinking of where she gets punched in the face?
That one actually ends up helping her, but like, yes. Yeah. But I think the first one doesn't. Okay. Nia's just like gobbling through everyone.
Yeah. And Becky's not even on WrestleManias unless they're in multi-person matches or a battle royale. But it's one of those things where like every week, like we're just throwing up our hands because she's getting these stupid distraction losses where somebody's music plays and Becky gets rolled up and you're like, she's a geek of a champ. And eventually people are starting to get pissed at this. And it culminates when Ronda comes in, and the whole plan there is to build up a couple people for Ronda and Charlotte to beat, to bring up Charlotte and Ronda at Mania. And so we get to the Survivor Series, but I believe it was, is it TLC before that, or is it Extreme Rules or something, where we have babyface Becky versus babyface Flair. And after the match, after some fluke win, Becky just lays into Charlotte and the crowd erupts.
Right. It's supposed to be, this is supposed to turn Becky heel.
Yes.
But what Becky is doing is essentially an audience transference because the audience was ahead of the game on quote unquote the dream match of Charlotte versus Ronda. And it wasn't their dream. It was a dream being imposed upon them. And Becky becomes the vehicle for this, but once again, McMahon doesn't know how to make baby faces. Once again, McMahon makes cooler heels and heels that are more likable and more relatable than the baby faces they're supposed to be getting the heat for.
Yeah, we get like 2 or 3 weeks of you know, Becky doing the "you people never supported me" type of promo and Road Dogg on Twitter defending it. And we get and
great defenses too. I mean, like, it was the classic. I'm sure some of you have seen the meme. Principal Skinner, yes. No children who are wrong. Like, there's never been someone living deeper in that stereotype than Road Dogg during those weeks.
Chris, I used that exact meme in a reply to Jim Valley of Figure Four today for the criticism type thing. Yeah,
put it nice.
Yeah, and so we get to this Evolution match, and it's much better than I remember, but you're watching this, and on commentary the entire match, they're trying to put over, you know, Michael Cole screaming that Becky Lynch has lost the faith of the locker room while everybody is chanting for Becky in this match. It is, there are tone deaf spots. There's a roar spot from Charlotte where Becky, it's a last woman standing match between Charlotte and Becky, and she's piled on a bunch of stuff like a heel. And is sitting there on the ring, you know, nervous if Charlotte's going to stand up. And then Charlotte stands up and she begs off and she's running away. I'm like, it's not until the end of the match where Cole pivots on commentary and says, there are some people in the audience with a connection to Becky Lynch. And I just go, it took 35 minutes of this crowd dying for Becky to win, for Gorilla to make the call, for Cole to pivot on commentary. I just could not believe it.
And even when they do that, like, they always do that with absolute reticence. It's so weird to watch older wrestling from, like, 1980 to anywhere in the mid-90s. Like, all the way up to with the WWF, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart feuding in U.S. and Canada thing, where the commentary used to be much better at taking the reaction of the audience and weaving it into the narrative. If not on that first broadcast, because everything was kind of bucking trends, by the next show, they figured out how to work the way the audience reacted and are not trying to just steamroll past it.
Well, the difference is those guys, when they had headsets, they were just for time cues for the most part, or reminders of things. Now, Vince is in the headset most of the time giving story cues, and instead of letting them be in the moment.
They have big talking point things throughout the calls of each one of these matches. And I've seen the sheets, and now I can absolutely 100% hear it cadentially when someone is working off of the sheets. The guys are good at doing live reads or whatever, but you can just tell when someone is reading versus when someone is having to think word for word because they're, you know, trying to extend the chains on this sentence to get to a period. Also, there's a certain blockiness to the way that Vince and the WWE writing team does characterization and tells stories about the characters that you can't miss. It's not the way any normal human you've ever met talks.
So we get Boo the Woo, which was a fantastic phrase, and then led into the man, because to be the man, you've got to beat the man, and Becky is now the man. And then the rocket starts to take off. They're still trying to make her a heel. They're now building her up against Ronda Rousey, that dope Ronda Rousey.
But it turns out that the man character, when confronted, like, just stop and hear real quickly, you've got now Ronda, who is coming from a UFC run that ended with some controversy and did not make her the most endearing, and they have been kind of, you know, fluxing in between with her characters, and she had had some rocky outings along the way here. And it kind of felt like she was being handed the keys to the kingdom, because you would do that when you get someone like Ronda Rousey, but you also had Becky here. Becky has now changed her character to the man, which is, as we are coming up on, what's it, 2017 at this point?
No, this is late 2018.
Late 2018. This is a very fresh character in 2018. I mean, we're like in the middle of 2020. I'm not, you know, doing like ancient history here or anything. Yeah. But like, this is a very of this decade style character. Whereas Charlotte Flair is a fantasy princess character from yesteryear. It's not like what she is doing. It's a classic character in that sense. And classic is good, but it's also older, and you want Charlotte to be the babyface.
Well, it's not only older, but Charlotte's character. The problem for me for Charlotte's character is it's never grown. It's never.
She's not great at it like Rick was.
Well, Rick could cut promos And that she's not true. Allowed. All she does is say, I'm a Flair. I'm the queen. I was born for this woo. That's every promo she's ever done on the main roster.
And the other thing with Rick, too, what they are doing is they are porting exactly one iteration of Rick onto Charlotte.
And what titles.
right, exactly. And that's it. Like, it's the titles without the fact that, like, what made Rick so great and what made our connection to Rick so deep is that, like, he has all these different iterations. He's a good guy. He's a bad guy. You were booing him last week. Now this week you don't really trust him, but you want to like him because he's cool. And the figure four leg lock's really exciting. Like, he has all these layers, and the connection and the intensity of the connection, much like Dusty Rhodes, it comes from the layers. It's not polka dot Dusty, right? It's all these different, and obviously Dusty's interactions with Flair. The layers and the depth to all of those interactions, that's what creates the classicness of the characters. So then when Rick comes out in the robe, yeah, there were other guys before him who came out in a robe. Gorgeous George came out in a robe. But Rick's robe symbolized that this dude had traveled around, and he really believed he was the best. Also, being a traveling champion back in the 70s was really cool for that. And Charlotte's just coming out there wearing daddy's clothes.
Yeah, but we're now at Survivor Series 2018, which was here in Los Angeles, and the match was going to be Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey, and the crowd was fighting the company at this, if you remember, because everybody could see the writing on the wall. Becky loses to Ronda. Ronda takes on Charlotte, quote-unquote, main event at WrestleMania. And we're doing T-shirt wars, you know.
This is also killing the Ronda push. Let us talk about this.
Yeah, it is a bit, but we're doing T-shirt wars. And SmackDown invades Raw, I believe. And Nia Jax stiffs Becky right in the nose. Boom. Broken nose. I think cracked orbital bone. Biggest match of Becky's career. Matches off. But there's that final shot of that Raw, I believe, with Becky defiantly with the bloody face. Just look at, and now she's an absolute rock star. You can't beat this woman at Survivor Series. Are you insane right now? The crowd is in love with her. She's pulled from the match.
She's the toughest woman presentation. Mm-hmm. Ironically, you have Ronda, who you were bringing in to exude a level of toughness, and Becky Lynch finds a way to do it within the context of professional wrestling without having to import it from UFC.
Exactly. You are dead on that. She was tougher than Ronda, who was playing weird verbal games and doing these weird promos that she'd never say that were written by Heyman or Vince, and you're just like, and she's coming off as petulant at this point, as opposed to woman of the people or fangirl Rhonda, if you recall. So people are starting to turn on her as well. But Becky has to give up the match and gives it to Charlotte. Well, Charlotte was already promised pretty much the main event slot at Mania. So we get into this convoluted three-way build. TLC, we do the triple threat match. Am I remembering that correctly? Between Asuka, Becky, and Charlotte, so that we can get to the winner takes all.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right.
Or no. Asuka won there, and I think they may have. Yeah, they took off the belt later to get to the winner takes all. But we're starting the Charlotte,
this is where Charlotte ends Asuka's streak, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no. We had the three-way between Asuka, Charlotte, and it doesn't matter. Really doesn't matter.
It really doesn't matter. Yeah, this
from
is great.
From January up until April, we have this convoluted three-way build now between Charlotte, Becky, and Ronda, when it would have been much better if it had just been a straight one-on-one between Becky and Ronda. And that to me is the real tragedy, because I don't think it doesn't matter how hot you can try and make Sasha ever again. And I don't think you can. Same a little bit with Bayley. And I find both of those unfortunate circumstances. I don't think women ever main event Mania again, unless Ronda comes back full time for a strong run.
I think that that's right. And I think, you know, this illustrates a kind of another organizational problem with this company, where they're willing to risk physicality with people when it comes to using ladders, chairs, tables. Jeff, you can come back from like blowing out your knee and we'll put you in a ladder match. Oh yeah. Oh, of course. But when it comes to having a, I'm not saying a King's Road level of grit and grind sort of match, but having some degree of stiffness, the hoss match, if you will. This company is gun shy about it, but they'll throw you off of a balcony or throw you through tables or have you take a huge bump off of a ladder onto another ladder on the outside of the ring all day. It's very strange. And this is exactly what Becky and Ronda needed. They needed a match where they could slug at each other, because both of them, you bring in Ronda to import this new toughness into the division. Becky had been building up this toughness. These two needed to be throwing forearms at each other, tough looking drop kicks at each other. Like, they needed to be slugging it out a little bit and then throwing some stiff looking suplexes. And that's what people wanted to see too.
Yeah. And then Becky is then coronated at Mania after a 12-hour WrestleMania at 1 a.m. New York time. And she just becomes every other, how do I put this? Because they wanted to make her Steve Austin, but she's coming off as like modern day Drew McIntyre in many ways.
The company doesn't tell defense stories.
Yeah.
Like, this company has been pretty atrocious. Okay, they're okay at the getting the belt story. If you want to give them credit on that, okay, I don't want to fight you on this. Tell me, listeners, tell me one good I've got to defend this title story arc that you've seen in the last 5 years. Damn. On this show. They don't do it. I mean, right down to Daniel Bryan. The first title defense for Daniel Bryan was like this weird plunder match involving a forklift against Kane. That was the big, we got to have Daniel defend the title moment. This company's not any good at the second part of the story, which is, okay, our heroes got the MacGuffin. What now?
Yeah, because what they did a lot of it. I mean, you remember the story they did when they brought up Lacey. It was the Lacey and Corbin versus Seth and Becky thing, where if one of them lose, they both lose the titles. The Asuka and Sasha feuds were underwhelming as feuds. The matches themselves were quite good, but I just think they're not as memorable.
Titles and defending them, not even a good storyline. But that is a more thought-out storyline than 80% of the I've got the title, now what storylines.
Yeah. Like, if either the Sasha Hell in the Cell story or the Asuka I'm going to beat you because I've never beaten you story were well told instead of just kind of a hotshot type thing, I think we'd remember those matches a lot more vividly. And then, you know, we were starting to kind of get to that, although it looked like Becky was going to face Nia at this Money in the Bank pay-per-view before the word of her pregnancy came out. And so now we have this retirement, quote-unquote retirement, going away for a while, we'll call it that, sabbatical, if you will, where WWE takes credit for her massive rise.
That was an Ozovich reference. Hmm? That was an Otis reference.
Yes, because Otis is the new Dusty, which is the worst take on the internet.
Yeah. I'm keep making those jokes all episode. Thank you very much.
Oh, geez. But yeah, they do this. They do a great video package in remembrance of Becky. But you think about all this and you go, God, Becky outkicked your coverage after this company was trying to just work against her so hard, and I got mad at it, and now I'm just like, no, now we need to celebrate. So Chris, what is Becky Lynch's legacy in WWE?
Well, Drew McIntyre basically stole her character, so she lives on.
I think she's gonna be remembered as a great character. I think she's gonna be remembered, I think her place in women's wrestling history with the Ronda and then Charlotte triple threat and main eventing is very, very important, because I don't think, again, I said, I don't think we're going to see women really main event ever again. They may co-main event. You may get like a, oh, Sasha and Charlotte at Mania, but they're a co-main event behind, you know, Braun and Roman 12 or whatever. But
no, I'll give you a serious answer on this. Her legacy is going to be, she is the toughest on-screen performer that WWE had in the decade 2010s. And she, for what they were able to get out of her, which is more than they were trying to get out of her, they left a ton on the table.
I will agree with that. I think they left a ton on the table.
I had to stop on the toughness thing only because Asuka's there. And Asuka's amazing. But I mean, when we recap the orbital bone fracture, coming up with the man, the leather jackets. I mean, she brought in a new level of toughness that, you know, people like Shayna Baszler, I think, have been able to kind of look at that model, and that's helped refine Shayna's character. So you see a little bit of Becky's legacy there too. And I think that it's unfortunate that this template for toughness and this template for confidence that is closer to where people are these days was looked at by Vince McMahon as weird. I think he probably chuckled every time she said she was the man, just for like, but she's a woman.
I had forgotten about Quinoa video Becky in the backstage thing, doing the jokes. And then also, you know, the mixed match challenge Becky with Sami Zayn, which was fantastic.
Okay, but that looked awesome because she was like, I want to fix you, Sammy. I want to change. Because Sammy was a heel at that point. He had just turned heel and he'd always been babyface prior to that. And Becky was trying to.
Yeah. I mean, but see, that for me is the issue with your toughness character point, because as tough as she that character was, they never really went double down on the toughness thing, because she had to cut the inner.
That was my point, is that she came up with a model that they didn't utilize.
Yeah, they wanted to get back to, you know, kind of wisecracking Becky at the same time, and the two just didn't mesh.
The wisecracking Becky, I think, is also an impulse that Becky has too.
Yes, so it's her acting.
I wouldn't. Yes, WWE was all too happy to embrace stuff that would make her a little more downwardly mobile, but like Becky Lynch likes to crack herself a joke. And it's not a knock on Becky Lynch, but the man character needed to be funny at other people's expense.
Okay. I think for me, the lost legacy is the fact that they just did not, we did not get the great one-on-one in-ring feuds between the Asuka, Becky, Charlotte's, Sasha's, and Bayley's. You know, that we were really thinking would change women's wrestling. And everybody's a part of this story, unfortunately. But you know, when you look back and you go, okay, who was Sasha's, or not Sasha, who was Becky's, you know, Terry Funk, Ric Flair, or Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat type of rivalry, and you don't have it. You have a couple matches here and there, but there's not that big resume to go back to. So, ice cold thoughts on Money in the Bank, Chris. Do you have any?
Yeah. A lot of people seem to enjoy the Money in the Bank match far more than I did. I wouldn't say we were at Edge Randy Orton territory, but the gimmicky style stuff with the humor, like WWE humor sucks. They just aren't funny far too often. Steph and Vince. Steph was horrible, right? Like Steph was like a D-level actress. Hey, what are you guys? You can't be in there. That's not the real place. Ha ha. Terrible. Terrible. The soundtracking choices. This is a company, Jeff. This is a company that has had an in-house music team for nearly 30 years. And the soundtracking choices during this were like, all right, play dramatic music 3 here. Okay, I guess play 4 here. All right, play zany music 2 here. Like, no thought whatsoever to the music choices. Does it need music? Not entirely clear to me. Long-term, would this just have been better with canned audiences popping and doing some cheering? Or, crazy idea here, do some commentary. Just do it as commentary.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not great because you're going to end up with a wacky races vibe, right? Like, now Asuka's dashing to the elevator.
Yeah, you know what? You hit on something that I didn't mention. I did the post show on Fightful, and those are where my hot takes are going to be. They wanted the mad world cannonball run wacky races vibe to this, and I just don't think they got there.
No, because the wacky races, the wacky races, each character had a gimmick to how they were going to get to the top. And so, like, what is fun about the wacky, much like Mad World, everybody has, like, a plan, and it's slightly convoluted and slightly stupid, and you want to see how it's going to mess up on that person. And no one had a plan here other than, like, Asuka, I guess, but, like, I'm not loving Asuka's characterization, and I think some people are enjoying the wrong parts of Asuka's characterization too much backstage when they're writing for her. But, like, everyone else, no one has a plan. They're just cannon fodder, like, or they're bumbling morons. But again, no gimmick inside of the match. If you ever watch the Wacky Races, and I know someone has who listens to the show because they got Muttley as their icon. Love that guy. But, like, if you ever watch them, they had, like, an Adams Family style ripoff. And so every time, like, those guys would, you know, bats would fly out and, like, you know, a werewolf would come out and help them out. You had Dick Dastardly and Muttley, and they would do the classic cartoon villain Wile E. Coyote sort of, like, things. And who are some of the other wacky races?
Ant Hill Mob and the Chugaboom.
Oh, the Ant Hill Mob. Okay.
Love the Ant Hill Mob.
Yeah, right. I got to say, Ant Hill Mob always baby faces with me. And the Ant Hill Mob would be running, like, kind of 1930s prohibition, organized crime style gimmicks and stuff. And you'd want to see how each one of those gimmicks would pour onto it.
Yeah,
theoretically, with wrestling, you have characters who could come up with plans that are fitting inside of their character, but you'd have to be thinking about writing the comedy through the characters, Vince, rather than writing the comedy through yourself.
Yeah, I
and your daughter who can't act.
You know, you had the weird professor who would, you know, come up with crazy inventions and stuff. Yeah, no, I like your theory. I just remember the Dana Brooke spot where she pulls down a briefcase full of money. And I have some thoughts on this.
They're giving her more. She's a moron.
Yeah, they made her a moron, which is just fascinating given her treatment on Raw or SmackDown the past couple weeks, where she's gotten wins and everybody's like, oh, look at that. Number one, if she got to keep the money, it'd be awesome. Number two, why do you have briefcases like that in boardrooms? Are you having, like, middle management fight for corporate opportunities? And then the dumb Steph line, and then having a folding chair in this room as if, you know, it just appeared there. It was just, there needed to be, to me, a little bit more quality control on the storylines. I mean, you killed Aleister Black and Rey Mysterio. You killed them. You threw them off a roof of a building, and they landed on a second roof as if that wouldn't hurt. And they're back wrestling on Monday night.
Oh, the second roof thing, right? Like, it's so emblematic of WWE not thinking about meaning to any of these spots. And Corbin does that promo on Monday night where he's like, yeah, I didn't even know there was a roof there, which I'm supposed to extrapolate what? You were trying to actually kill
him? Yes, that's what you're supposed to extrapolate, that he is such a dastardly heel. He tried to kill two of his coworkers in order to get because the risk, as you know, is worth the reward, Chris.
That's a terrible characterization choice, right? But if you were going to do that, Jeff, you would want that to mean something. You've now exposed Corbin as the type of man who would murder somebody. Guarantee you a month from now, that won't matter at all.
No, it won't.
Not at one iota. The second roof will never be revisited again.
Yeah, and, you know, the food, you just need the trombone going womp, womp after every single cameo.
You know, because Paul Heyman, he's fat, you see, so that's why he needs an entire table of food to himself.
Rey is Peter gazing in a bathroom. that was the one that I go, no.
Well, the kids, they love brother love. Everyone relates to this character.
Oh, my favorite part is still Asuka dancing in the elevator. I howled at that. That was a great.
Like, that was funny, but that was, like, also the closest to a Mad World spot because it's fitting her character, the one that she's been doing right now, or, like, a wacky racist type of spot.
But it's like nobody did any strategy. Everybody's asking where the briefcase is, where's the stairs. It's like, did anybody do any of their due diligence before entering this match? It was just, you know, the Vince spot. See, for me, the comedy note on the Vince spot is they should have drawn that thing out until we got sick of it and it became funny again, where Vince is just putting on the antibacterial.
Yes, he should have been like slathering, like, and he just keeps staring at them and keeps putting more and more hand sanitizer on his hands, like starts rolling up his sleeves, starts like slathering it on his arms.
No, I mean, after they leave, where it's just the camera is there in the office, and he's just cleaning, and it's just a ridiculous amount of time, just an absolute ridiculous, and then it goes back. That was my...
No, but again, those type of jokes...
It's anti-comedy.
Right. Well, okay, it's not even the anti-comedy component. It needs the person who's going to be the butt of the joke to be able to go there. Mm-hmm. And Vince always has to be the guy getting over, even in a joke.
Yeah, and that was the unfortunate part. I think having the power over the talent in terms of the humor, right, really...
It's distracting from the match. And so, like, yeah, I mean, you can have them all freeze... the anti-comedy moment, I think, is a good way for them to, you know, for the talent to not lose their heat as we have this little comedy beat in it. But you, at the end of it too, you can't have Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles outside of Vince's office just like doing bad comedy writing and also like obsequious characterization where they're like, oh, are you upset me?
AJ has PTSD going into the room with a casket. And there's the other thing is he didn't establish the reality. Is this a normal work day? Is that why Steph and Vince and Paul Heyman is in the cafeteria for some reason? Then we need to.
Or why is nobody in the building? Yeah, no, it's very strange. Yeah, like some people are still working despite the fact that they're having a match there. Like it's an absurd plot, and everything that we're describing to sort of quote unquote punch this up isn't necessarily going to yield a better wrestling match at the end of it. But we're trying to talk about making a watchable product with these people in it. Like, there are ways to improve it. I don't know that you get to good wrestling, though.
The only other note I had on Money in the Bank was I thought Bayley and Tamina over-delivered. I thought it was, you know, it wasn't a great or even very good match, but man, for what it was, people give Tamina way too much crap. Now, it got a little too clever at the end because Tamina needed to be in the ring to grab Sasha's leg, and she was a little bit behind. But she's also, I think, 43 years old, and she was keeping up the pace with Bayley, who I thought worked her ass off in this match and just doesn't get enough credit for it. But I thought it was a better match than everybody groaning in pre-show things were giving it credit for.
Yeah. I mean,
you're not there. It's obvious you're not there with me.
Okay, look, no, here's what I'm going to say. It's not as though Tamina has lost a step.
No, she never had a step.
You finished that sentence.
I just accidentally did. Yeah, I you know, look, I'm not going to put it up as one of the greatest women's matches of all time, but it was serviceable. It was fine. It was solid. Everybody played their part well, you know, got over, you know, the best feud in this match was Bayley versus Michael Cole. So
the place for Tamina has always been just as somebody's heavy too on the outside of the ring. And I think, you know, Tamina can still do that. She can still exude confidence, throw a clothesline in the outside of the ring. And, you know, I like Tamina as the insurance policy character. She can still do it. She still exudes and works that character just fine.
So we get to Raw.
It might even get more interesting as she advances a little bit in age.
I don't see her being around too much longer. I gotta be honest.
I concur with that. Would you say her heart's not in it in some of these matches?
I wouldn't go that far. I just, you know, Vince and age, and it's one of those things. So we get to Raw, and we have this dramatic opening moment with Becky just cutting a promo of her life to me. I mean, it's everything I want in television. It makes you feel something. She's obviously torn up about it, even if she's playing up the sadness a little bit, which I don't think. And then they make the call to have Asuka come down, and I'm not going to go Joe Lanza and say Asuka is female Otis, but can we not do the clown stuff when Becky's pouring her heart out, please?
it's the thing that Vince has decided he likes the most about this new Asuka character. It used to be, when Asuka first introduced this, the craziness was a wrinkle in the intensity.
Mm-hmm.
And now the zany craziness is the thing that Vince likes the most. And Asuka's Otis. Hold on. I wouldn't say Asuka's Otis, because there's another layer going on to the Asuka thing that I find more offensive than the Otis thing.
What?
I think it's stereotypical bare minimum. The gimmick's based around, oh, she speaks Japanese and nobody understands it.
I will go there with you. Even though we want her to just speak Japanese, it's become that clownish, broken English mixed in there, Japanese, as opposed to...
They're flashing up subtitles. So, yeah, she has scripted lines. There's a different way of doing this, right? She has scripted lines. Everyone's got scripted lines. You flash up subtitles underneath, and what she's saying is normal stuff. Or even if she's saying it crazy, you read the line, and there's a juxtaposition between the delivery and what's written on the screen. We don't ever understand what she says, so she's just a raving lunatic, even though she's speaking words. Mm-hmm. She's just speaking words in a language that we don't understand, because we know less.
Yeah, easy peasy, more Japanese, and then she starts a Becky chant to an empty arena, and I'm just like, what are you doing? You, the only thing that could have ever been staged worse is if Roman Reigns comes out and makes his leukemia announcement, and they have the Bushwhackers come down and lick him in the head and make everything all right for her. You're just that's the level of stupid I thought this thing was.
Or like Roman Reigns has to hand over the title, and he has to hand over the title to King Corbin, and King Corbin starts cutting a negative promo on Roman right there.
Yeah, and
well, I'm gonna be a real champion now since you can't do the job, buddy.
Well, you know what? It's funny you say that, because later in the show we get the Shayna Baszler promo, which, look, I get heat. This crossed a line for me. This because the opening line, where how stupid do you have to be to get pregnant in the hottest part of your career? That's Vince's voice in my head, and I can't get out of that.
Oh yeah, no. You hear that line? That is a Vince syntactical structure.
It's either that
or Vince vibe.
I will give an out for this. This could be Heyman being Edgelord Heyman.
But then it continued on. There were other I didn't write down that promo line for line there, there were other things in that promo that distinctly smell of WWE speak and WWE style copy. This was part of a larger problem though throughout the show, even with the babyfaces who were trying to say nice things about the pregnancy. Everyone talks about pregnancy very, very weird on this. And I'm not saying this in like a political way. It's like, oh, you got a bun baking in the oven and stuff. It's just a weird way of talking about it that I felt very taken aback by. And the Shayna Baszler promo was like the worst part of that. Like, I found that promo to be offensive.
Yeah, the have you seen the father? You're just like, oh my God, really? You went there? It was just, it was, you know, there's being, you know, the way to do it would probably be the, oh, well, too bad, so sad. Now it's an opportunity for me. You do it within the world.
This is like when they had the Bellas fight and one of them said to the other, I wish you had died in the womb.
Yes.
Like way, way, way too far.
Yes, I just and my favorite, oh, God, the Natty line. I'll read this verbatim. The Natty line to set up the Shayna match. Hey, Shayna, do you know how bad it looks to disrespect the miracle that is motherhood?
Right, right. This company can't write. They shouldn't write about pregnancy, and they can't write about pregnancy.
You have, and to me, bringing out Seth as... Seth is just sad sack morose. can't get out of bed because his girlfriend broke up with him type of catatonic character.
And it's even weirder to reference that, to have Shayna reference Seth Rollins right now in this, because I guess we're talking, I mean, when she says, have you seen the father? I guess the charitable read of this is, yeah, I mean, look at who Becky Lynch is, the dad is, this guy who thinks he's the messiah of wrestling and he's in the mid-card.
But instead, it's the guy who's mourning he'll never be able to date again because he got
it. Well, he did have excellent taste in women, Jeff.
Oh, yeah. Some of them. but yeah, I found that whole connection. Everybody knows Seth and Becky aren't an item. What are we doing with that character? Good Lord. And this show. Oh, this Raw. This Raw. The Street Profits. Viking Raiders.
People think that this is just an audience away from being good. I got news for you, buddy. that is not the problem here.
There's nothing wrong with the comedy of watching the Street Profits do a basketball match against the Viking Raiders, unless you make it canon that the Viking Raiders have never seen a basketball before and have no idea about the rules of the game, even though they bailed on the joke in the very last part of the vignette.
I don't have a problem with the Street Profits hanging out with the Viking Raiders, and like they have to compete against each other, but they're baby faces, so they have like, it's a very almost old school 80s thing. They have fun. There's a little bit of tension behind them so that, you know, when they have a match that maybe things could escalate or whatever, but it's still kind of like an okay vibe. I don't even have a problem with the Street Profits playing basketball. Guys, they've been coming to the ring in basketball outfits for years. Where did they get those? Presumably they play some basketball somewhere. Okay. And that's fine. That's absolutely fine. But I didn't like the, you know, white guys can't jump stuff going on. There were things that were, once again, playing on a dated style of humor that's, I mean, first sin of comedy is always it's unfunny. And there was a lot of that going on in the skit here. And then, yeah, to your point, they don't even kind of stay internally consistent with the comedy trope story that they're trying to tell. And so at the end of it, I just kind of found it unsatisfying.
Yeah, I just... In the midst of this,
wasn't very funny, right? They have a basketball game and the Street Profits completely wipe the floor with the Viking Raiders. And then
the Viking Raiders reveal that they can actually play basketball. And it's just like, all right, whatever. Womp, womp. In the midst of all this, we get the reintroduction. Well, two things. We get told that how did they word the wild card rule this time? It's preposterous. It's like the free pass opportunity or something like that, where
they should have called it like the inter-show visa or something.
Yeah, where like, well, that's how it is. It's like four times a year, a star from one show can appear on the other one, and it's like, you know, they're throwing that out the window by July. It's
okay. I have a hunch how we got here. I think they wanted to get rid of the brand split altogether, and people from Fox and USA were like, nah, 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 nah. But they also need creative mobility because the ratings are in the toilet.
Well, they also need creative mobility because nobody's flying in. So it's one of those things where it's like...
So there's like lots of layers to this, but I think that that's how we arrived at this weird midpoint that's very unsatisfying. And once again, just sort of like it's a deus ex machina, but like, a very, like, uninspired one.
In the midst of this morass, we get the glorious reintroduction of the Iconics who have their working boots on to that night. I liked this. And, you know, I hope it's a little bit more of an edge for the Iconics. I don't think it will be because, you know, we're going to get them making fun of Nikki Cross, and we're going to get it's an Alexa Bliss Nikki Cross angle. So it's going to be, you know, cute girl, ugly friend taking on pretty girls, and it's going to be stays that way. But I liked the reintroduction. I like bringing them back on TV because they always make me laugh for some reason. But
I don't think that it's going to be a big push for the Iconics, but what I do think that this could present narratively is like an opportunity to kind of drive a little bit of a wedge between Nikki and Alexa. I think they'll ultimately overcome it, but you can have the Iconics sort of needle Alexa about her prior heel greatness and how Nikki Cross has been dragging her down.
Chris, you know what we need in this show is more wedges, because we just don't have enough of those.
No. Well, here's the thing. I was listening to AEW commentary this week, and I learned that women love fighting with each other.
Oh, yes. It was like, is Ross taking – are they taking notes from the Jerry Lawler playbook? That and the line was during –
That is totally a byproduct from hanging out with Jerry Lawler too many years, because he used to say that exact line.
Jim Ross uses the line, brothers gotta get paid, and I went, what are we doing with our lives, Chris? But that's tone deaf on AEW's part. Speaking of wedges, we get the Austin Theory, Angel Garza, Los Ingobernables, Orlando faction that's just breaking up before our eyes, which is not interesting in any way.
No, because what's the compelling baby face out of this? The person who would be the compelling baby face would be Angel Garza.
Yes.
But they moved away from the babyface character with him. And, I mean, like, you know, if they've been thinking this out at all over the last several months, you'd have a semi-tense relationship between Angel and Umberto, but their family and family does stick together. And, like Umberto comes to the aid of Angel when Andrade and Austin Theory turn on Angel Garza. But, like, right now the dynamic is that Andrade and Angel are needling Austin Theory, and who cares about Austin Theory in the context of the show, because you haven't done anything to make us care about Austin Theory, and when you brought him on, you turned him into a heel within, like, 2 weeks. And also, all this stuff has been not hot at all. I was trying to think, what's the opposite of white hot? I don't know what it is, but it's whatever that is.
And then the end of Raw. This Edge-Randy Orton thing, where our girl Chuck... I love Charlie Caruso. Don't get me wrong. I think she's fantastic at her job, even though they don't let her really do her job. It might be the greatest wrestling match of all time.
End show.
Someone's a little bit butthurt by the comments about the Edge Orton WrestleMania match being one of the worst WrestleMania matches of all time. Someone got a little bit needled by that. Someone's a little gotten to, I think, Chris.
Oh, yeah. This is why they're insisting on having a wrestling match now.
But they don't even use wrestling in the day-to-day vernacular of WWE. It's almost a banned term.
That's the most obvious term, like, tell, right? Like, everything else, it's a studious avoidance of the word wrestling. I mean, even in this week's commentary and this week's storyline angles, I'm trying to remember, there were other storyline angles where they say, like, you know, entertainment, or like, I love performing. When they were talking about the Intercontinental title on SmackDown, they didn't say wrestling at all about that. Like, they were talking about it being the workhorse belt, and they were saying all these other things, but, like, we all know that, like, the way people talked about the Intercontinental title in yesteryear was it was the wrestler's belt. It was the belt where all the wrestling was done, but they used wrestling in the context of Orton Edge. That's the tell. Like, somebody is very, as you said, butthurt about the comments about that horrible WrestleMania skit.
So we get to SmackDown. And SmackDown, the subtitle should be, How to Kill a Hot Babyface in 2 Hours. Otis, who I will take my victory lap on now, won the Money in the Bank briefcase. Everybody look at Hawkins. How can you say that? Do you have inside information? No, I didn't. But he's the hot character on SmackDown, and it had to go to somebody on SmackDown. And Baron Corbin held the briefcase on the Go Home show. Very easy. 1, 2, 3.
Oh, yeah, Jiffy.
He comes out and he dances with the briefcase.
He doesn't just dance with the briefcase. He tries to have sex with it.
Yes, he tries to have sex with it. He's coming out on Miz TV, and they've turned him into Eugene for some reason. Just not only just lovable and big galoot, not only just a Chris Farley character, but a dumb Chris Farley character. He has meat in the briefcase. We're doing gender identity jokes from John Morrison.
Yeah, right. Okay, so the Miz and Morrison dynamic was, in addition to having that horrible joke about, oh, he could be pregnant because he's fat. Like, it's not just a pregnancy joke, Jeff. It's a fat joke. Because, you see, he has a big belly, and when women get pregnant, they're fat, but they're not fat. They're actually just pregnant. But it's 2020 now, and you see gender spectrum. Ha, 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 ha. The worst part, I mean, that is a very offensive joke. Like, it's a bad joke. It's a bad joke, though, beyond anything else. It's not just that, you know, like, it, you know, touches some nerves. It's just not funny on top of everything else. And Miz and Morrison's dynamic, those guys initially had some chemistry when you put these two together a few months ago. It was completely absent during this.
Yeah. Now, Chris, there are two stories you can tell with this Otis character. And really only two stories you can tell. The first is big, dumb, lovable galoot wins over the heart of a woman far too attractive for him, gets this Money in the Bank briefcase, and gets screwed out of it somehow by the hot woman and someone who's a co-conspirator. And then we feel bad for him. And eventually we go on his hero's quest to regain this title opportunity slash title. And he overcomes the odds and wins it. And everybody applauds and cheers and goes home happy. The other one is, big dumb galoot gets this title opportunity, gets crapped on for weeks upon end as not being good enough, not being the type, eventually overcomes with the support of this hot woman whose coverage he has outkicked somehow, overcomes the odds, wins the title, still a good guy. The story here is he will not succumb to the ring like Gollum. He has this title.
There's a third one here, which is that it's kind of like the Rudy Rocky story.
Yes, where, that's what I'm meaning.
Ahead. He's trying to go the distance, and he ends up cashing in against Braun Strowman, has a really tough match against Braun Strowman. Braun goes heel, and Mandy's in peril, and Otis makes the decision, the girl, not the title,
yeah.
The relationship, not the title. And so he loses, but he wins. And that really connects us, but it goes right back to your point. Continue, Jeff.
No, I think that's a heck of a story too. I don't want Braun to turn again. But the main part of this story, Chris, for us to go along on this journey with the hero is he has to be heroic. He cannot look at this briefcase and go, I am going to take a crass opportunity to take advantage. Like, say
it's corrupting me.
Yes, say if Braun Strowman were attacked by the Fiend and they were in the midst of a tag team match, maybe Otis takes a look at that briefcase for a short moment, but we're all going, no, Otis, you can't do this. This would be the wrong thing to do. And he eventually says nope, and he helps Braun Strowman up. But at the end of this SmackDown, Chris, what does Otis do?
He looks at the – when Braun turns his back, Otis looks at the briefcase and it's like, do it. Do it. It's the monkey's paw, like compelling him to do the evil thing. It's corrupting him. The whole story here is money corrupts. Last week it was climb the ladder because you want to achieve greatness. Then you get the briefcase and it turns you into a monster.
It didn't turn him into a monster though. It turned him into
but like it's an evil influence on you.
He went weasel heel. He went, oh no, just kidding with you, dude. Just funning. Just a joke. Let's shake hands now. When Braun had called him out, and I mean, when Braun is the competent babyface here, he goes, I know how these things end. I know what's going on, but I think you're a good person.
We talked about that earlier on too, right? Yeah. So honestly, if you want to take that earlier promo between Strowman and Otis and run with it logically, narratively now, here's how this ends. It ends with Otis turning into a heel and beating Strowman.
Yes, that's just after doing the worm too. They made Braun do the damn worm, and I'm just like, all right, we're not going to make him tough either. But now we're going to make him dumb. We're going to make him Giant Sting, even though he cuts this promo and he goes, "I know what's going on. I know what happens to people when they get this because I've been there." And it's like, my I just...
Yeah, the storyline is power corrupts. Oh, the opportunity corrupts
it's
you.
It's Lord of the Rings. It's Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, oh, yeah. The ring is corrupting unless you have a truly pure soul.
And Otis is supposed to be the pure soul. You can't get more pure than that.
The implication here is that Strowman's the pure soul, but it's supposed to be Otis.
It's like David versus Goliath. Oh, that's unrealistic. Let's have Goliath go over here. I ended that show and I just threw my hands up and I go, how can I deconstruct this other than ranting and being negative? Oh my God. But there were a couple of bright spots on this SmackDown. I loved Gulak and Daniel Bryan. Loved the match. Loved the end where they hug it out and nobody turned on each other.
Oh, it's great. I love that these two guys are just like free to have good wrestling matches. And like they're not doing a ton with the characterization, but man, that was a great match. That was fun. I enjoyed the dynamic there. That's worth watching. If you're like, what am I going to watch on SmackDown? Just go and watch that.
Oh yeah. It's Daniel Bryan's fantasy fed where he just gets to do what he wants, you know, on hour number one and say the hell with it.
You know what? In front of a crowd, that has the greatest opportunity of getting the fans excited right now out of a lot of the stuff they've been putting on the main roster.
And my, as God is my witness, I loved the Sonya Deville promo. I loved that Sonya corpsed Dolph in the middle of it. And Dolph is just trying to hold it together. And I wish he had kind of given out a heel laugh, kind of like when JJ or Tully or Arn would pop Flair during a Horseman promo, and you could actually see the evil joy that Flair was getting out of saying something just nasty about somebody else. Sonya's great. Loved it.
And it's weird, like, how is she going to fit back into the Otis storyline eventually? It seems like what they're going to go with is that Sonya ends up, like, costing Otis this title shot.
Yeah, for Dolph. And Dolph takes it and gets
the or something. And then Mandy needs to get comeuppance on Sonya, and we end up going back to Mandy and Sonya one more time.
Yeah, I just, you know. And how does Tucker fit into this? Because it already looks like he's not only been genetted, he's been jettisoned. I'm a little fearful about this whole thing, but yeah, anything else on either? Oh, Charlotte. I almost forgot. Charlotte's now a babyface again, kids. She comes out and sees dissension between Aunt Pam and her sassy friend, Sasha.
And that's how she turns herself babyface. It's not any sort of fundamental changing of her character to make her more endearing in any way. It's just, well, I'm just going to rag on some heels. And really what it comes off as, and this is the problem, what we were recapping with Becky Lynch's career earlier. A lot of times, Charlotte's supposed to come out there and be a babyface, but really all she's doing is being the big heel, sticking their foot on the smaller heel, and in that moment, existing in a realm of truth because they are the bigger one.
Yeah, they should have, you know what it should have been? It should have been a celebration of heels that Becky was leaving. And then eventually it gets into a little bit of sniping about Bayley cashing in on Charlotte. And then it grows from there, I think. I have this strong feeling that quote-unquote heel Charlotte drops the NXT title, but babyface Charlotte, that like on that next Friday, wins the SmackDown women's title. And we're back at stage one all over again because Charlotte's not moving the ratings as we thought on NXT, and we need her to be strong, and we need to get to that 16 title thing. I can see this as an entire reboot.
We danced around the numbers, but for those of you who are listening who don't know them, they're both in the 600,000s this week for NXT and AEW, right?
I thought it was even lower. I thought they were both in the 500,000s, like by 50, and it was like, but whatever it was like 650 to 600 or 550, 500.
Or started 9 months ago, and there was 3 million people in a pie that we were trying to split up, and now we're under 1.5 million.
Yeah, and probably plenty of reasons for that as we transition, unless you have something else on SmackDown and Raw.
I don't.
NXT. It's become main roster with yellow ropes.
No, yeah, it's
what?
Yeah, Matt Riddle is like an Odyssey type of character, right? Like, bro.
This turn, we know it's coming, but it's so unearned. It was so unearned here.
Yeah, and like you could have made this work. You knew that Thatcher was getting annoyed by Riddle, but man, tell that, like, really
tell the story.
Yeah, open up with a video package this week of Riddle and Thatcher, and Riddle is being obnoxious. I don't know, maybe I don't know what they're doing. I'm not even gonna try like envision a skit, especially with like the world the way it is right now. But like whatever Riddle is doing, Riddle is absolutely getting under Thatcher's skin, and you're almost sympathetic to it. But Riddle's also, you know, just oblivious. He's not being a jerk about
it.
And then that transfers into the match. This is what you and I said this like a month ago. It's Frank Grimes and Homer Simpson. Like that is the story you need to tell, because it's also the story they were trying to tell, whether they knew it or not. And then you get into this match here, and like there's like a flub, and Thatcher loses his mind. He turns into a frothing madman after this match. It was without merit. Riddle trying to hold his own against Imperium
becomes stupid babyface as soon as he gets run out.
He should have done is run after Thatcher,
yes.
Right? Yeah, like because one, you get counted out and you retain your titles.
Yes, and you're trying to save the team.
And also, like, what the hell did Thatcher just do to you? Like he's the focus now.
Yeah, and we haven't learned anything about Thatcher to really bring, other than he has a grr face and he's a little serious. But they've only put that over for 2 weeks. This needed to be 6 months of this.
At least a few more weeks of this. But like they just gunned through this. I wouldn't have had such a problem with it if it was Riddle trying to find interim tag team champions while Stallion Pete is away and not really finding the one, which would have been another way to go off of the Newly Bros game. But like to have Riddle just lose the title here to Imperium, I don't really think it helps Imperium either.
Yeah, it's just he fits in Imperium if they put Thatcher in there, but a 5-person stable is a little bit much. But maybe he's
Imperium, but. Honestly, it would have been better if he had said, you know what? The Imperium guys think the mat is sacred, which is what I think. You, Matt, think that everything is funny and that everything's a joke.
Yes.
I don't think like that.
Yeah, show me or tell me and show me in this case. Yeah, and then the level of anger didn't fit the level of he accidentally got hit during a tag match and he just loses it. And you're just like, no. This is unearned. You can't.
It makes him look stupid too.
Yes.
Yeah, you're trying to make him a heel, but now he has, and this is an evolution from stupid babyface syndrome, Jeff. This is stupid heel syndrome, where sometimes you need to have an unjustifiable reason for a heel to go heel. But there's a difference between unjustifiable and basically dumb as hell. Mm-hmm. And Thatcher was well on the other side of dumb as hell this week.
I agree. Had Tegan Nox and Indy Hartwell do a match. I'm not saying this because she's now gone full red, but man, Tegan Nox has every single Becky Lynch vibe that Becky had when she was the man, and I would bring her up to the main roster and might have even poured it over the actual character to her. I mean, that's how strong it is to me.
That's interesting. I can see that. You know, obviously they have Dakota Kai doing a different thing, but something about like the small, really tough baby face girl, I think would be an interesting wrinkle on the Becky Lynch character.
Well, her whole persona coming out is, you know, tough leather jacket, you know, I'm here to fight type of thing. I think it's great. And God, I loved the vignette with Dakota and Reyna or Raquel. But gotta explain those pants to me that Dakota had the ripped short/jean type thing. I love this Dakota heel by way of the baseball furies from the Warriors character. But I howled at that visual.
Yeah, no, that was funny. That was funny. What else on this show? Because
I have the results in front of me. I'm going through.
We got Jake Atlas and Tony Nese. Jake Atlas, still a guy I don't feel like I have any meaningful connection to.
Jake needs to buck the company and just say gay, 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 just to get it out there because they're tiptoeing around it.
Yeah, they're tiptoeing around it. It's so weird because it's like, okay, you're basically going into the fact that Mr. Atlas is gay. Go with it then. Go with it.
Yeah, and they're afraid. They're deathly afraid of losing viewers over it. And the story they're telling is weak sauce. It's, I'm hoping to get this tiebreaker match with Drake Maverick.
I'm going to turn heel on Drake Maverick. It feels like right now he seems like a disingenuous babyface.
Explain this Johnny Gargano vignette to me.
Okay, so I finally get what's going on in these. I'm not saying I like it. I'm just saying I get it. So Johnny and Candace are still, you know, saccharine. It's the same way when Johnny comes out and does the entrance here. Only in the Johnny and Candace promos now, real Johnny's intentions and real Candace's intentions are coming out whenever we go into the black and white, I just did LSD moments. I don't get what that is. I was going to reference the old SNL skit Ride the Snake with Jim Carrey. I don't know if you remember that, but like when it went into the black and white thing, I did say Ride the Snake a couple of times during that. Yeah, it's very weird. We get that like there's the top layer thing where they're still the loving couple, and then there's the underneath layer where they're like evil now. I don't get what's motivating that, right? I get that it's frustration with the career and stuff, but there seems to be something missing with these characters, and it doesn't seem to have a ton of movement other than in this, they are at least telling you who their next targets are, right?
Yeah, it's an idea. I just don't know if it's a good idea.
It's not a fun idea.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I love a good, fun, evil heel. And this is not that. These are not, there's not a fun wrinkle on their personality here, or one that you'd want to see retained when they pivot out of these heel characters.
Finn Balor and Cameron Grimes. I really enjoyed just the slap fight that this became. I thought this was kind of your Hoss match of the week, even though, you know, the weird Damian Priest involvement is great, but I thought Cameron Grimes came off looking pretty well on this thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think we have been doing a longer story with Grimes and Priest aligning with one another. And, you know, I think that that's actually going to be a really good tandem could be a really good tandem if they had some, you know, good thought behind it. Cause you've got Priest who can talk. Grimes is a character, man. He's going to be like an awesome second to Damian Priest. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like he can definitely
pair them. I hope they pair them together.
And like they can work. So theoretically
vignettes, the Country City vibe is grounds for great heel promos right there.
Hey, sleazy country, sleazy city.
Yes.
And like you could eventually, when you want to break them up, have, you know, a little bit of the country city friction thing start to happen. But their sleaziness and impressed by each other's different iterations of being dastardly. So you've got Priest or Bane sleaziness, but Grimes is country. I know how to screw you over by taking you out to the swamp sort of country.
Yes, give me Tex Avery by way of the Blue Bloods vignettes. The country wolf, city wolf thing where Damien, we're going to go hit Manhattan and Grimes is just kind of lost, but you know, they're still maintaining their heelishness. I'm here for that. I am. Gallagher and Isaiah Scott, I'm liking this Gallagher tough character. I just, the tournament doesn't mean anything to me.
Right. No, the tournament doesn't, especially when you're watching the way that Charlotte's being treated and the NXT women's title is being treated, you know, going back to legacy of Becky Lynch, one of the key things that she did is help elevate that title to really, really mean something. And right now we are deep in a trough with that title. There are a number of titles that are just being handed around sort of mindlessly, up to and including the WWE women's title, or one of the two women's titles this week, which was just mysteriously in Asuka's briefcase. So this Cruiserweight Championship tournament, it would be interesting if anyone wanted to watch 205 Live. No one does. 205 Live is like a super dead product right now. And the Cruiserweight title is not a title that has been treated with any level of seriousness, even on takeovers in recent months. So, like, why would I invest in this tournament? And it doesn't even really feel like they're using this tournament as a vehicle to really introduce us to these new characters. These guys are here because we need to have television, because somebody said that we need to meet 2 hours on NXT every week. We can't just pare it down to 1 hour right now with the limited personnel team.
In a very 605 angle, Caden Carter beat Aaliyah with Robert Stone, quote unquote, scouting. Where does this go?
I feel like Aaliyah is going to try to get into the good graces of Robert Stone. But
that's
maybe
the story they're telling, but it feels like there's going to be a swerve somewhere in here.
Yeah, okay, so I think the wrinkle is going to be over the next several weeks, Robert Stone's trying to get Caden Carter
okay. To
join the Stone brand. And, I mean, the way you end up with Caden as the strongest, which I think is, you know, kind of the outcome you and I would prefer here, is that, like, Stone tries to court Caden. Caden goes, I want to achieve in this business. I don't want to achieve your way. And then at that point, Aaliyah comes in to really try to impress Robert Stone and maybe even gets like the initial one up on Caden Carter doing that.
Okay. I could see that. I could see that him souring on Aaliyah and then going with Caden, but Caden rebuffs and then Aaliyah shows him something.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing.
When he attacks Caden Carter, because it'll be, you know, he can't take it out on Caden Carter when he's been rebuffed, but Aaliyah's doing the thing that he wishes he had been able to do. And then maybe even then, after that, Aaliyah is going to be kind of Stone's goober for Chelsea Green.
Yes. She's Rick Steiner in Hot Stuff International. Yeah, she's – or the Varsity Club even. Yeah, she's the flunky. And then finally, we have this Riddle Thatcher match where the banana peel finish gets the roll up on Thatcher, and Thatcher ends by putting an arm bar on Riddle and trying to tear the arm out of his socket.
This was just so dead, though. Like this was an unexciting finish to the match. And then a really dead heat spot for
yes.
Thatcher. Like, Riddle's selling, not great. Just not great. All around, not great.
Yeah, between this and a couple of the sports entertainment spots in AEW, the thing with the truck and Cody at the beginning where he taps a barricade. Ooh, oh no, here he comes. Good Lord. That was
like some of the worst WWE with cars stuff. Like, that is right up there with them. Like, because he drove the truck like 5 feet.
And yes, he revs up the truck real fast and drives it 5 feet because we're doing product
fight.
We're doing product placement for Ford and we don't want to dent the truck. Ooh, yeah, the Stone Cold Cody Rhodes here driving the truck. Okay, do I put it in drive now? Okay, I'll go 2 feet. Ding, I'm getting out like a badass to fight. And then between that and the Sammy spot where he's limping like a geek the whole way down, just to, everybody can see it coming as a comedy spot. I went, man, the sports entertainment was strong this week on Wednesdays.
Yeah, no, this was just like AEW was a rough watch for me this week. I'll certainly say that.
But if you want to a real in-depth thing on AEW, Voices of Wrestling has its own show, Everything Elite. You can also listen to the flagship, Open the Voice Gate, Wrestling Omakase. I believe we now have a quiz show on the network. I mean, there's just a whole lot of shows for whatever your they don't have a lot of nostalgia shows, but I may have to get one of those going if I ever get sick of just doing this deconstruction of WWE. But those are all at voicesofwrestling.com, Voices of Wrestling in your podcatcher. You know, for the entire network, for us, we are Shake Them Ropes. You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. You can follow Chris and his trolling of various political personalities at Chris Novembrino. Chris, what are your other shows?
Some days I'm really on my business here. I have heavy Twitter days, and then I catch myself and go, maybe I should get off Twitter a little
bit. Yeah, I have those too, but I also, I have a burner.
Monday was a big day for me. Monday was a mood, Jeff. I caught myself at the end of the day going, well, I was really on this website today.
Yeah, I get that. I get those days, especially when I'm doing live watches of wrestling, but we've gone long. We need to get our plugs in. Go.
Okay. So if you want to hear, we just did a great debate episode. Obviously, we're moving into election season. People are interested in third parties. Not sure why, but maybe you'd like to hear a debate about third parties, particularly which is the bigger joke, the Libertarian or the Green Party. We get to the bottom of it by the end of the episode. I guarantee you we've got the final answer, so you got to go and listen to it over at don'tworry.tv or patreon.com/DWATG. My other show, the All in the Family podcast, again on hiatus. I like to think of it as a nap. Like, it takes a nap sometimes. And it'll get up, it'll do more stuff. But
Hold on, is it because you're pregnant and you have to go away for a while?
Yeah. It's like, when you get really lazy. I mean, that's one of the big problems with pregnancy. You're just not doing anything, so, that's how it goes. Show is taking a nap right now. It'll be back, but you can go and it's like archival and totally worth listening to, especially if you've never watched All in the Family. Worth watching. AllInTheFamilyPodcast.com for that. And you can find me on Twitter at Chris Novembrino.
We went along today, so it's a little bit longer than your average walk, but we appreciate your patronage as usual. We'll see you next week.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.